Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Fashion for Genocide.
Hello. A month ago, I told you about the murder of two white girls, Tracy Lambert and Susan Moore, in Fayetteville, North Carolina, as part of the initiation of new members into the Black and Hispanic Crips gang. I'm still receiving comments about that program. Apparently, many listeners, especially those with internet access, checked out the facts as reported in the Fayetteville newspaper, and they were shocked that just as I said, there was no media coverage of these terrible murders outside the Fayetteville area. They were shocked that virtually all of the mainstream media around the country would deliberately hide the news of these racially motivated murders from the white public. And these were the same media which had made such a sensation about the killing of a convicted black drug dealer and his girlfriend in Fayetteville by a white soldier, James Burmeister, in December 1995. But really, no one who has been listening to my broadcasts should have been shocked. I have commented over and over again about the virtual control of all of America's mass media, by the Jews, and I have pointed out many times that the Jews' policy is to disarm the white population morally as well as physically by deliberately creating the false impression that whites are oppressors and victimizers, and non-whites are our innocent victims. They want us to feel guilty. They want us to feel that it would be immoral for us to resist any of their schemes for more non-white immigration, for more so-called diversity and multiculturalism, for more racial mixing and racial intermarriage. That is what the Jewish media bosses are deliberately pushing, the destruction of our people through racial mixing, and they don't want us to put up any resistance. And I'm sorry to say, their program is succeeding. When they send their step-and-fetch-it Bill Clinton around the country making speeches about how much he is looking forward to an America with a non-white majority, about how any resistance to the government's programs for the darkening of America would be un-American, he is applauded by brainwashed young whites who have been deceived by this deliberately falsified media impression of whites as oppressors. Now, you know, I'm making a pretty serious accusation. I am accusing the Jewish population as a whole, and the Jewish media bosses in particular, of planning our annihilation as a race, of planning to commit genocide against us. And I don't want anyone to think that I am basing my accusation on only the few instances of racially motivated killings I already have cited. Their suppression of the news of the Fayetteville murders of two white girls by the Crips, and their sensationalizing of the news of the Fayetteville shooting of a black drug dealer and his girlfriend by a white soldier, and of the dragging death of another convicted black criminal in Texas by three whites. And so today I'll talk a bit more about anti-white crimes which the Jewish media have deliberately covered up. The details aren't pleasant. In fact, they are shocking. But I believe that many listeners need to be shocked. Let's begin with another crime which occurred in Fayetteville. This is timely because the trial of the criminals began just last week. Here's what happened. Donald Lange, a 25-year-old white soldier at Fort Bragg, was leaving an international House of Pancakes in Fayetteville. He accidentally bumped into a group of seven black soldiers who were going in. The blacks began punching Lange while shouting racial insults at him. They dragged him into the adjacent parking lot and stomped and kicked him, while continuing to shout racial epithets. A witness in the trial of the blacks, Tracy Cochran, was in the parking lot where the assault took place. She told the court last week, quote, "The black person who threw the first punch was the one who knocked him down. It dropped him down to his knees. He got back up and got hit again. I was walking toward the fight, screaming and hollering for them to leave him alone. By then, he was getting hit by people left and right." Another witness, Gina Perez, testified that she saw 8 or 10 blacks kicking and stomping Lange as he lay on the pavement. She told of seeing one black kicking Lange in the face, causing his head to slam into the pavement and bounce back. The black would then kick him again over and over. Perez said, quote, "They just kicked him to death. I remember him being on his side, being kicked over and over again," end of quote. Actually, they didn't quite kick Lange to death. They just destroyed his brain. He has neither moved nor spoken since the beating. His brain was so badly damaged, the doctors say that he will never again be more than a vegetable. Now, if you live outside the Fayetteville area, I'll wager that you've heard not a word about what happened to Donald Lange before this broadcast. Imagine what you would have heard if Donald had been black and the soldiers who destroyed his life had been white. The networks would have shown Mr. Clinton denouncing the attack on television and calling for new laws against hate crime. In fact, that's exactly what they had Clinton doing last year when a white teenager beat up a black teenager who had come into his white Chicago neighborhood. Clinton referred to the incident in his weekly radio address and used it as an example of why we must do something about race hate. But Mr. Clinton has responded to the stomping of Donald Lange with silence. If Donald Lange had been black and his attackers white, the media bosses would have had Janet Reno on television announcing that she was sending in the FBI. The media would have been interviewing every professional hate merchant, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, Morris Deese and his Southern Poverty Law Center, and all the rest. The media would have made a real circus of it, and the whole world would have had it drummed into their consciousness. Another hate crime against a poor, innocent black by white racists in Fayetteville. In order to convince the media bosses that he was doing something to end hate after the Burmeister shooting of the black drug dealer, the commanding general of Fort Bragg ordered a witch hunt among the white soldiers on the base. Every white soldier was checked for tattoos that might suggest a skinhead affiliation. As the media frenzy continued, the witch hunt for white racists in the Army eventually spread to other bases. Now, don't hold your breath waiting for the general at Fort Bragg to start questioning black soldiers about their racial beliefs and their gang affiliations because of what blacks from the base did to white soldier Donald Lange. The media pressure just isn't there, and the general has better things to do with his time. Last month, a black mob in Alton, Illinois, which is a suburb of St. Louis, beat a white man to death who had made the mistake of coming into their neighborhood looking for his stolen television set. As they were beating and kicking 48-year-old Richard Skelton to death on August 10th, the blacks hooted, laughed, and shouted racial insults, according to a number of eyewitnesses. Now, it's possible that you may have read a few words about this racially motivated murder if you're a careful reader of the small news items in the back pages of your newspaper. But you certainly didn't see anything about it on television or read any detailed news accounts unless you live in the immediate vicinity of Alton. Even the news accounts in Alton tried to excuse the black murderers by suggesting that Skelton may have precipitated the attack on himself by using racially insensitive language in asking about his stolen television set. But there is no dispute about the facts. Blacks began beating the unarmed white man. Black bystanders watched and shouted encouragement to the attackers. Others joined in the attack, and soon as many as 25 blacks were beating and kicking Skelton. They continued kicking him until he was dead. Again, imagine the response of the controlled news media if the races of the victim and the killers had been reversed. A black wanders into a white neighborhood and is beaten to death by a mob of 25 whites who laugh and shout racial insults as the black dies. My God, the media would be apoplectic. They would be calling for martial law and a roundup of all heterosexual white males who weren't registered Democrats. Everybody in the world would be hearing about the killing over and over and over again, along with sermons against white racism. But as it is, most of my listeners are now hearing about last month's racially motivated mob murder of Richard Skelton for the first time. Here's another one that you may have read a few words about if you're a news hound or if you live in eastern New York State. Earlier this month in Poughkeepsie, New York, a town on the Hudson River about 70 miles north of New York City, police discovered the decomposing corpses of seven white women and one black woman in the house of Kendall Francois. The women had been murdered over a two-year period, with the latest being killed just a month ago. Francois is a 27-year-old black man who works as a hall monitor in a nearby high school. Affirmative action got him the school job, even though he had a previous arrest record. Francois was living with his mother and father and younger sister and eight decaying corpses. Police found the dead women lying on beds and in the midst of piles of rotting garbage in various rooms of his house. Francois's parents and his sister, who is employed as a nurse at a nearby hospital, said that they hadn't worried about the stench from the dead women because they thought it was the odor of the garbage which had been allowed to accumulate in the house. Francois had picked up the women one at a time, taken them to his house, had sex with them, and then strangled them. Now, in a sense, the murders of these women may not have been race crimes. The women were all prostitutes, and aside from the fact that Francois had a preference for killing white prostitutes, we don't really know what his motive was for killing them. And I should add that I believe that any white woman, prostitute or not, who consents to sexual relations with a black deserves death. So I cannot really condemn Francois for killing them. The real racial angle to these killings is the media response, or lack thereof. Do you remember John Wayne Gacy or Jeffrey Dahmer? I'm sure you do, even though Gacy was arrested 20 years ago, and Dahmer more than 7 years ago. Both of them also were serial killers who stashed the bodies of their victims in or under their houses. Both received enormous publicity when police caught them, so much that we still remember them many years later. But they were both white. Gacy and Dahmer, of course, received extraordinarily heavy media coverage, not because they were white, but because their shocking crimes were extraordinarily newsworthy. Francois has received almost no media coverage outside the Poughkeepsie area, not because his shocking crimes were not extraordinarily newsworthy, but because he is black and most of his victims were white. Earlier this month, a court in Colorado convicted Francisco Martinez of participating in the abduction, gang rape, torture, and murder of a 14-year-old white girl, Brandy Duval. Martinez and six other members of the Black and Hispanic Bloods gang grabbed Brandy from a bus stop in Denver on the night of May 30th last year. They took the young white girl to the house of one of the gang members and spent several hours raping her and then sexually torturing her with a knife and a broomstick. During the trial, one of the gang members told the court how Martinez laughed as he repeatedly rammed a broomstick into the body of the bleeding girl while she screamed and pleaded for her life. Later, they stabbed the 14-year-old girl 28 times and dumped her body in a ditch. Then they went home and disposed of the bloody mattress on which she had been raped and tortured. Four of the Bloods gang members have pleaded guilty. One other besides Martinez has been tried and convicted, and one is still awaiting trial. This case is reminiscent of the Fayetteville murders last month of two white girls by members of the Crips. The Crips and the Bloods are the two largest non-white gangs in the United States. Like the Fayetteville murders, Brandy Duval's murder and the subsequent trials have received virtually no national news coverage, although Denver area newspapers did report them. Once again, imagine the reaction of the television networks and all of the other national media if instead of the Bloods raping, sexually torturing, and murdering a 14-year-old white girl, seven Ku Klux Klan members had done that to a black girl or a Mexican girl. The gruesome details would be on every television screen in America, night after night after night, and there would be no end to the parade of politicians and preachers and professional hate merchants telling us about the evils of white racism. We know that's what would happen because we have seen it before in far less egregious cases. Most recently, in the dragging death of the black convict in Jasper, Texas, this summer. Now, all of the black-on-white crimes I've just mentioned, the stomping of Donald Lange by black soldiers in Fayetteville until he became a mindless vegetable, the kicking of Richard Skelton to death by a black mob in Alton, Illinois, when he tried to retrieve his stolen television set, the murder of seven white prostitutes by a black school monitor in Poughkeepsie, New York, the horrible rape, torture, and murder of 14-year-old Brandy Duval by members of the Bloods gang in the Denver area after they had snatched her from a bus stop. All of these either occurred during the past month or came to trial during the past month. And I could have given you 20 more recent examples of horrible race crimes committed by non-whites against whites, which have received the silent treatment by the media, except in the areas where they occurred. And these are all crimes which would have received extensive national publicity if they had been white-on-black crimes. Anyway, I hope that I've made my point. And my point is that the controlled media are far more likely to publicize white-on-black crimes than black-on-white crimes. And this is not just a fluke. It's not that I have carefully selected a few black-on-white crimes which somehow escaped the attention of the media. No, their way of dealing with interracial crime is systematic. It is consistent. We all understand that. If the Ku Klux Klan does something, the Jewish media act as if the sky is falling. If the Bloods or the Crips do something, they ignore it. There is no denying that. We know it's true. So, why do they do it? If I ask a non-Jewish newspaper writer or television reporter or magazine editor, why do you and your colleagues minimize the news of black-on-white crime? Why are you protective of non-white gangs such as the Bloods and the Crips? Don't you believe that you have a responsibility to warn the white public about the dangers posed for us by non-white crime in general and by non-white gangs such as the Bloods and the Crips in particular? And why do your colleagues maximize the news of any white-on-black crime? Why do you go ballistic if there's any possibility of a white organizational connection, even if some racially oriented literature is found in the white offender's possession? Don't you understand that the Bloods and the Crips are essentially anti-white criminal organizations, while the Klan can only be accused of having members who sometimes do stupid things? Why do you deliberately create the false impression in the public mind that white-on-black crime, that's what you call hate crime, is a big problem in our society, and at the same time, you hide from the public the truly horrendous and dangerous problem of black-on-white crime? Why do you do it? I've never gotten really clear and honest answers to these questions, but what is clear is that they all know how they're expected to report the news. They know what the party line is. They know which side their bread is buttered on. It's clear that the top media bosses have set the fashion for reporting interracial crime, and no one who works for them is willing to depart from the fashion. That fashion, which is almost never stated explicitly, which is only implied, is this. White people are evil, especially heterosexual white males. They have persecuted non-whites for hundreds of years. White people really shouldn't complain if non-whites sometimes strike back at them. That's only justice. When blacks and Mexicans organize in gangs, it's only to protect themselves from whites. But when whites organize, it's to oppress non-whites. Whites need to be reminded that they are oppressors. That's why white crimes against non-whites should be emphasized. And if we're to have a happy and prosperous multicultural society with lots of diversity, which is, of course, a wonderful thing, then whites need to mix more with non-whites. So we shouldn't give them any news which might make them reluctant to mix. We shouldn't tell them about black crimes against whites because that might frighten white women away from black men. It might even lead whites to organize against non-whites. In the long run, the only sure way to have a peaceful society in which everyone gets along with everyone else is to get rid of the white majority, to replace the present white majority with a non-white majority. A lot of racial mixing and racial intermarriage will help to achieve that, and we should report the news with that aim in mind. That is the prevailing fashion in the controlled mass media today, whether the media people will admit it or not. That fashion has been set deliberately by the media bosses. And I, curious and inquisitive person that I am, have looked at where that fashion is taking us. And when I have done that, I have looked into the face of death, racial death, racial extinction. And I, hard-headed cynic that I am, have decided that the Jewish media bosses who designed the current fashion in reporting the news have, in fact, designed it with that aim in mind. And I also have decided that it is our responsibility to ourselves, to our posterity, to our ancestors, and to the God of nature which made us what we are, to use any and all means, any and all means, to combat these Jewish media bosses and their collaborators in the government, in the schools, in the churches, and wherever else we find them. Thanks for being with me again today.